I do not think.
So what are you getting at?
Blah, blah, blah.
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
Hey, we're live! Woohoo!
Turn off your radio before it's too late!
Hated it.
I told you this was a bad idea.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Catch us worldwide on the 98.5, the Sports Hub app. Go to your app store now and download it. You get the stream live. You get all the podcasts. You get anything that you miss throughout the course of the day. You miss an hour, a segment, a show, any of the shows here during the day. It's right up on the app immediately after the shows are over. So catch up with us on the app, 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Back to your phones as promised. Pete in Delaware on the Red Sox. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
Hey, just on real quick on the J.D. Martinez. I hope they don't get him. This is predictable by Dombrowski, but the guy's defense is horrible. So it's like putting another Hanley Ramirez on this team. And I remember people, Red Sox fans, complaining about Stanton's defense. Well, Martinez is his worst. And like you guys said yesterday, the money, it's ridiculous. You're going to have to pay Martinez almost what you're paying Stanton anyway. So why don't you at least make a legitimate shot at Stanton? Really drives me crazy.
Okay, so that's the point. I don't care about his defense. If he hits the way he hit last year, I'll take his bad defense. I don't know, if you hit 45 bombs, fine, play bad defense. I just don't trust him to hit 45 bombs for the next 2 or 3 years.
He had 29 of them with Arizona. I mean, at the time of the deal, he had 16 homers and like 50 RBI. Right? So, again, this gets back to the whole idea of...
Excuse me.
You want to clear your throat?
I got a little something, a little Greek salad
something
in there.
Stuck in there. Like that should scare the crap out of you.
He was released 3 years ago. And I know David Ortiz was also almost released and then had another couple of years, but... Isn't that what we're just talking about? What's in his Greek salad?
Yeah, it ain't just feta cheese, I'll tell you that.
It's like, I don't know, Abreu, a far more consistent guy. And I know Stanton has some ups and downs too, but some of those are injury-related, and some of those injuries aren't his fault. He hit by a couple of pitches that I don't chalk those up as being injury-prone. You get hit in the face by a pitch. And then, didn't he have a broken wrist or something that was also from a hit-by-pitch or
something?
Sounds
right. I don't remember. The worry with him is his legs. He's had some leg problems, knee, hamstrings, stuff like that. But even then...
Okay, so, but those are legit.
Injuries
from hit pitches or from swinging the bat? No, I'm sorry.
No, you get, that is a, you know, what they call an impact injury, right? Like, that's just sort of a freaky thing that happened. It doesn't suggest the guy's brittle.
Here's Gil in Lincoln. Hi, Gil.
Hey, what's up, guys? If I had to say one word for the Red Sox, we're screwed, right? If we sign J.D. Martinez, that has David Price written all over it. But then if we trade for Machado, we're going to give up a bunch of guys. And just last year with the whole thing with Pedroia, he said, I have no respect for that organization. So if we get him, we're not going to sign him, and we're going to lose our guys. So we're kind of screwed.
So, Machado, look, I would take on a long-term deal any day of the week. I do. Concern's the wrong word. I'm interested to see how he would mix here, because he's an emotional fella. But so is Bryce Harper. So, like, both of them would be wild cards in that regard. The Machado thing, Mazzo, you said that Duquette's not letting teams talk to Machado about a long-term deal.
Correct.
So it has to be a pure rental.
Correct.
Now, I don't love Xander Bogaerts, but I'm not trading him for a one-year rental.
Yeah, listen.
And I don't love Eddie Rodriguez. I'm not trading him for a one-year rental.
And under normal circumstances, I would tell you I wouldn't do this either. But I think that they are pretty much porked, if you want to know the truth. So they missed out on Stanton. They missed on Ohtani. They don't have any guys coming through the system. Not real studs that you can say, well, that's a guy they're going to build around. They've already got them all here. Some of them have disappointed. And so where's the solution? Now, if you want to tell me, if you can tell me, that they are going to be legit players for Bryce Harper, I'll wait it out. Okay, there's a lot to like there with Harper, both from a rock star standpoint, creating a buzz.
Oh, yeah, he'd be great.
Oh, instant buzz.
Check all the boxes.
Totally. And I also like the fact that he's left-handed. He's got the power to hit it out to the bullpen, so I don't worry about that. And I think in their ballpark, his average could go up 20 points for crying out loud. So I like everything about Bryce Harper. Sure, absolutely. I just don't think that they are necessarily going to be real players for him because they don't spend the kind of money on those contracts to bring in guys like that, I don't think.
We've got Terry in Denver. Hi, Terry.
Yes, I want to make a comment on Manny Ramirez when they signed him in 2000, 7 years for $20 million a year. So Stanton for $26 million a year is a bargain.
Agreed.
How could they blow that?
I don't know, Terry.
And I knew in the back of my mind when he was available that the Yankees would end up with him.
So it's a frustrating deal. Is that all you got?
Yeah. No, there's another third baseman that I would go for. Yeah, I think he's nearing free agency. Arenado of Colorado. I'd take him over Machado every day of the week.
Okay, so his numbers, I don't have them in front of me. Aren't his numbers just filthy?
Yeah, ridiculous.
Is that Coors Field?
Partly, but he can hit. I think his numbers on the road are pretty good, too. So Arenado's a fabulous player. He's 2 years away from free agency. And if I'm the Rockies, I'm not moving him now. No way. I contended last year. And he's he's too much of their friend. I doubt he's available.
Jake and Wellesley. Hi, Jake.
Hey, what's up? So basically, I think that you need an identity. And to be completely honest, if you get rid of someone like Price and you can tangle him in front of Chicago and say, Joe Maddon, hey, do you want him? We can take back someone like Lester, because Lester only has really 3 years of $75 million left. And the fourth year is just a team option for $25
million. Okay.
And maybe Jake. Even Bocek and Bradley, who are both Theo guys, you could dangle one of them in there.
Jake, are the weed shops in our hometown? I live in Wellesley. Where are the weed shops in Wellesley?
Not
you
sure.
Smoking weed?
Yes.
Why would Chicago give up John Lester, who won them a World Series and is a heart and soul guy, for that loser David Price? Why would they
ever do that? Did you see his numbers last year? 4.33 ERA.
He struggled.
Trending downward.
Yeah. Do you think they liked John Lester or not?
They also said at the beginning of the year that they needed a bat for the offseason because they don't have one. Addison Russell's a shortstop that they have that just does nothing. And their second baseman, Baez, he has pop and he plays defense, but doesn't really do much.
Yeah, what bat are the Red Sox going to give him?
Hey, Dick, Bradley and Bogaerts are both the...
Oh, please. You said bats.
Yeah.
You said bats. Jake, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, because they've done so much for the Red Sox offense while they've been here.
Just from Lester's standpoint, why wouldn't he just laugh right in their face anyway?
Why would Lester want to... He hates you.
Right.
He hates it here. He got out of here and he won and No, it doesn't work on any level. And I don't care what sort of personal relationship Joe Maddon has with David Price. If he'd swap out John Lester for David Price, he needs to have his head examined. He's drinking too much wine.
Bradley and Bogaerts because they need...
Bats?
Bats! Why'd you give him Brock Holt, too? That'll solve their offensive problems.
Call anytime, Jake.
Maybe they'll take Christian Vasquez.
Joe and Revere. Go ahead, Joe.
Happy holiday, guys.
You too.
I would say Pat and go after Harper. I like Harper on our team. I wouldn't even J.D. Martinez. See you later.
See you later.
He hit 29 home runs in Arizona, which is a small ballpark. And when he goes in other parks, what is he, a double hitter, a single hitter? He's not going to hit that many home runs. He might hit the wall a couple of times at Fenway. Nah, I wouldn't do that. I would stay in with Harper.
Harper, bona fide mass, bona fide stud.
I mean, Harper would be, look, who wouldn't want him? I would take him in a second. And you want to make the Red Sox buzzworthy? Bryce Harper will do it off the field as much as on it. You'll get 8 years of buzz out of him. He'll make all the difference in the world. If you want buzz, he's your guy, and he's a fabulous talent on top of it. So, again, now you want to tell me you want to play some sort of quid pro quo game, and you want to go sign J.D. Martinez, and Boris says to you, I'll give you the inside track on Harper if you sign J.D. Martinez. Fine. I will take the chance. Absolutely. Because to me, they got to do something big there. They have to do something big. And J.D. Martinez, these guys aren't good enough to really change them, I don't think. They need a guy who's a legit 3 or 4 hitter. That's what they need. These guys that they're talking about are 5, maybe even 6 hitters. Like, J.D. Martinez scares the crap out of me.
Russell in Marina Bay. Hi, Russell.
Hey, man. Dombrowski, once again, he's an arrogant, pompous, condescending, sneaky creep. I can't understand how he's gotten the job that he has. But with this J.D. Martinez thing, the type of person J.D. Martinez is, he's the kind of guy who, he gets on his cop regimen there, puts up big numbers all of a sudden, and then when you go sign him for huge money, he gets back and all he does is like drink ice water with lemon juice and his numbers stink and he totally burns the team that laid out all the cash for him and does him the big favor and then he just absolutely blows for years and years and years. It happens all the time. It's happened all the time.
You can't say I'm going to drop you. But his general point, if you're still hearing us through the delay, I totally think happens. You train a certain way, you train a certain way, you train a certain way to make your money and get your free agent contract, and then once you get it, you think about the long-term ramifications of how you're training, and you start training smarter, which is a whole different way of saying what you know I'm saying. And I worry, I don't know if J.D. Martinez is that guy or not, but his number's sort of weak of that sort of thing. You're released 1 year, then you come back and you start hitting home runs, and then you're in the second half of your free agent year, and you hit 26 bombs in the second half of your free agent year at the age of 30?
You have to be blind or stupid to look at that guy and his numbers and not think that it stinks. Something stinks there.
Or it's just, even if it's, you know, and again, I have no idea on Martinez. I'm just in this era. I don't know how you can't think that way. And let's say it's totally legit. Well, then he's fluky. Then he's too hot and cold. Then he's too inconsistent. If it's just on the level, I don't want on the level inconsistency either.
I think, was it you who said yesterday, like, if you're going to spend on the free agent market, you go after the absolute elite guy.
Yes, and when they've done it, they've had much better success than when they've overpaid for the second-tier guy.
So you don't end up regretting the Chris Sale deal, the Pedro deal, or the contract.
Or the Manny deal.
Right, you don't regret those, because those guys produce. It's the Hanley deals, and the J.D. Drew deals, and the Pablo Sandoval deals, Carl Crawford. When you pay these guys like superstars and they're not superstars, those are the ones that kill you.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. No one says it like they do. Like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you nuts?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
High slot, Krug. Right circle, Marchand. Far circle, they score! Brad Marchand, just off the far circle, able to thread one home. And David Pastrnak able to fire it in to tie it at two with 1:26 left. Here's Zetterberg, pedals his way in, muscles his way into the right corner. Look out, Nyquist lost his footing, and the Bruins will come the other way. Long two-on-one, maybe Krug into the slot. Marchand walks in, backhand, he scores! Brad Marchand able to muscle free from a check and over the far post, still controlled it. Drew Howard down and flipped it over the top. A 3-2 overtime stunner for the Boston Bruins here in the Motor City. How about that one?
What a totally undeserved 2 points you got last night, man.
See, I look at that as Marchand rescues Bruins.
No question.
That's what that was. Holy crap, those two plays that he made.
The pass was something else.
Oh, ridiculous. Both of them. The pass was insane. I don't know how he got it through there. And I saw a comment from Pastrnak saying that he was looking for a rebound. All of a sudden, the puck appeared. He just whacked at it and it went in. So that Pastrnak, you know, good for him for reacting to it and be able to get good wood on it and score. But he said he didn't think he was getting the puck there. It was an unbelievable pass. And then, see, I think the game-winning goal, to me, is underrated.
Filthy.
The defenseman is all over him. It looked like he was going to be able to handle the puck. I don't know how he ultimately was able to get it to his backhand and then finish it the way he did. You know, I'll tell you. I know I've said this before. I never imagined he'd be this good. Never. Like between the run he had late last year and then plays like that last night, he is dynamite. Boy, is he fun to watch.
We're not going to bring up his playoff numbers recently, Brad Marchand, because he won you. He single-handedly got you 2 points last night that you didn't deserve. You were not good. Bruins kind of stunk last night. In fact, big swing. I mean, you don't even realize that the Red Wings would have been a point behind you for that last playoff spot. And so that was that four-point thing, and it happened within, you know, again, you have two shots in the first period. You're down 2-1. They pull the goalie. Rask comes out with 2.5 minutes left. So Cassidy pushes that button. They tie it up with the goalie pulled and then win on that thing in overtime. And it's just, you didn't deserve it, but you took it. All right, so those were two big points, especially because tonight, here comes the tushing. Bend over, Boston. Here comes the tushing.
Here comes the coho.
I even bother to look up the numbers because they're so ridiculous.
They are ridiculous.
Have the Capitals won the last 11, something like that?
That is correct, yeah. The number exactly is 0-8-2, the Bruins are against.
Okay, so it's been 10 straight that you've lost to or not won in regulation against the Capitals. 10 straight, and Holtby's had to have been the goalie for most of them.
12-2-0 are Holtby's numbers. With a 1-8-1 goals against average.
So, wait a minute.
lifetime against the Bruins.
What is it? 12-0-2?
12-2-0 with a 181 goals against average.
So you have beaten them twice.
And a 944 save percentage.
Okay, here comes the tushing.
Oh, totally, please. Like, they can't. Every time they play this team, they lose.
So if they lose last night against a bad Detroit team and get creeped up in the standings, and then tonight here comes the Capitals, you know, you show up tomorrow and it's like, well, where are we again? So that was a huge close for the Bruins. Huge.
And I give Cassidy all the credit in the world. So I wanted to ask you this again today. Do you think Julian pulls the goalie with more than 2 minutes to go?
Well, so, no. I don't think that he'd know. I don't think Claude does a lot of the things Cassidy has done.
I mean, no shot do they pull the goalie there. No, most teams wouldn't do it.
Actually, it's a trend. Patrick Roy has started at the, and he's done now, but when he was coaching the Avs, he sort of started this thing where 2 minutes left, 3 minutes left, you pull the goalie, and other teams have followed suit. So it's actually a recent trend to pull the guy out earlier.
I'll tell you, I loved it. I thought, wow, this is aggressive. And, you know, then they end up scoring, and again, Marchand saved their bacon. But, you know, the coach made a good move, the players responded, and then they win it in overtime. Total steel job, especially because the go-ahead goal by the Red Wings was a shorty.
It was. And Pastrnak, you know, wrong guy to be caught out on the blue line, David Pastrnak. But you mentioned Cassidy, and an emailer pointed this out to me last week, so I just thought I'd bring it up here because it is interesting. Since Cassidy took over the Bruins, his record as Bruins coach is 33-17-5, 33-17. That's 71 points in 55 games.
Pretty good.
All right. If you extrapolate that over an 82-game season, that's a pace of 106 points, which basically wins you the division, gets you home in the first round, and on an off year, might even contend for, like, first in the conference. But since Cassie's taking over, they are playing at a 106-point pace since he took over. And the sample's growing now. He's over a half season, you know, combined into his tenure. And they still don't have a very good team. I mean, some of these young kids can play. I like the way they look right now. I'm pleased, small p, with the team right now. But last year, let's face it, that was not a good team. And the first couple months of this year, my God, with those injuries, you look at the lineups that they were fielding most of those nights. So between the way they looked last year and the roster they had last year and the roster that they had for the first quarter of the season this year, to be on a 106-point pace, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And we've done a lot of Bruins bashing, and we should. They deserve it. Matt Bolesky gets released today. That's another horrible move by the front office. And for all the bad moves they've made, they got the coaching thing right. They got the coaching thing right. When they let Claude go on parade day, Cam Neely said, "We're better than we've shown. I think we're better than we've played." And he was absolutely 100% right. That a different coach could get more out of the team, and he was absolutely 100% right. And I don't even know, and I don't even think Cassie's done anything that revolutionary. I think that they're a little more offensive, but they haven't given up much defensively. They play different defensively. It's not like they're just packing it in. I think they're more, it's still more aggressive defense, but they play good defense. They keep the puck out of the net.
I'll tell you, I think they've gotten better at it lately, too, especially in front of their own net.
Their coverage, right, has gotten better. You know, you sort of worried when he took over, it'd be fire wagon hockey, and you'd be winning or losing 6-5, and that doesn't work either. But that's not what they've become. That's not what they are. They play in their own end, and they play hard, and they play well against the wall, and all those things Claude wants you to do. But they're a little more interesting offensively. And I also think that the rope with the young players is better. I'm glad Cassidy's ushering in this next wave of young players instead of Claude. I just do. And I know Claude did a good job with the last wave of young players. He was the right coach for those guys. I don't know. I like this better, and I think the team's better off for it.
Yeah, and he won't coddle your $7 million a year goalie either.
Which was important, too. I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, he's a good motivator. I think that's part of it, too.
So I do think, like, compared to the end of last season, and look, they've been winning lately, right? What is it, 9 out of 11? But it feels like he scaled back his rhetoric just a little.
Oh, yeah, he could have, right. So what? Look at how he handled Tuca. He benched Rask, but he never said it. He never really criticized him publicly. He never really...
He wasn't as blunt as he was a year ago.
Maybe
or at the end of the... So, and I think this is a good thing. Because if he continued to talk like he did at the end of last season and was that candid and forthright, these guys would hate him. There's no way he would last. So maybe he's found a little bit of a balance there. Like it feels... You know, look, I get more... I found that game or the end of the game anyway with the Bruins way more enjoyable than the end of the Celtics game. I just the finish was spectacular.
Well, you didn't know who was going to win in one game, and you knew who was going to win in the other. Okay. That's a big thing.
I told you this early. You know, if the Bruins are building something here, I find that appealing. Like, I know what Kyrie Irving is. The intrigue with the Bruins to me comes in the uncertainty of it, and they're on a nice little run here. To me, I was more interested in the hockey game last night.
So anyway, I still don't know what they are, and I don't know what Cassidy is. I don't know if he's a good coach or not, or if he's here for the long haul or any of that. I do know that since he took over, they're playing at a pace of 106 points. It's a 106-point pace, and he's now coached 55 games for the team. And so the sample's growing. And so I guess what I'm saying is it's gone beyond just that sugar high of changing coaches last year, right? That's the thing we didn't know last year. You just change coaches, change the voice, and the team gets a spark, and so, you know, it could be anyone behind the bench. So this year, it's, you know, that runs out. The sugar high runs out, and now it's about coaching the team, and they're still putting up points. And they a lot of nights, they have a roster that shouldn't be putting up points. But that's not to say, you know, last night's a different story. Last night, they had pretty much a full lineup, and they sucked. They sucked. And if they play that way tonight, they're going to lose 6-1. Maybe 6-0.
They might lose 6-1 even if they play well.
Okay, so this is another interesting spot. I'm glad they're going with Hudobin tonight, because Rask versus Holtby has proven to be just a joke. And so try something different. You got a spark when the team played in front of Hudobin early in the year. They play a different way in front of Hudobin than Rask. Something's got to change against this Capitals team. So I'm glad they did it the way they did it. The division game's more important anyway, so play Rask last night. You play Hudobin tonight, maybe get lightning in a bottle, and if they play differently and put up a result tonight against this team, then I think you really have a chance to look at them.
Yeah, let's hope Hudobin doesn't have to get pulled.
Which might happen too. Over under on that. Does he make it to the 10-minute mark of the second period?
Felger and Maz. This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Maz.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey guys, I just don't understand why you are bashing. I mean, I wanted Stan, but he did not want to come here. No matter what happened, he was not a free agent. He wasn't coming here. There's no sweepstakes. You can, like, give him the best package. He made up his mind. He did not want to come here. If a team blew it, I would say it's Chicago, Houston, Dodgers, whatever. I'd say they blew it for not getting him. He did not want to come to Boston.
The agent said just the opposite. The agent said, we were never presented with it, but if we were, there's no reason that he would have said no to it.
And you believe that he would have came to Boston if he made that one phone call?
I think I'm saying if you had tried and put in a good effort and talked him into it and put in some work, there was a chance. That's what I think.
I get that, but I honestly don't believe that at all, and I don't bash them at all for not going after him.
Okay, well, we can agree to disagree. If you were St. Louis or who's the other team? The Giants. Well, then, you know, okay, you made an honest bid.
Right, we did everything we could. And he said no.
And ultimately he said no. Was that you?
No.
That wasn't you? Don't you get it, Alex? They entertained or a lot, you know, there were deals going on where places he didn't want to go. In other words, if you were one of those teams, you would have been treated like San Francisco or St. Louis, where you had a seat at the table, you negotiated a deal, and then he turned you down. And we would know it because we knew it about it with those teams. So that's putting in an honest effort, and then you would say, well, he just didn't want to come here. You can't make that claim now. You don't know that. In fact, the agent said it was never presented to us, and if it was, there's no reason he would have said no to it.
See, to me, that's the frustrating part of the story. You look at the Red Sox and say, you have a clear, obvious need. Everybody knows it. There's a guy out on the market that can provide it, and you didn't go after him. And now you're going after guys who are second-tier players that are going to cost you a ton of money and that, to me, are worse decisions than the guy you could have had. Like, I don't get that. That makes no sense to me.
Pete in Essex on the Bees. Hi, Pete.
So, Bruce Cassidy has forgotten more hockey than I'll ever know, but can we stop playing Krug and Pastrnak together, especially on the power play? I mean, even with Bergeron on the ice, those two, according to Felger and Mav's math, are 40% of the people you have on the ice, and they don't play defense. So, last night, shorthanded, Krug does what he does. He abandons the point, runs down to the side of the net, and Pastrnak was like, you know, just a shudder in the wind against two guys. He didn't make an attempt.
That wasn't shorthanded. You were on the power play.
Right.
Right, yeah. They're shorthanded. And two guys, have you ever seen a more wide open 2-on-1?
No.
He didn't even get near either player.
See, I blame Pastrnak there. He's now third year, fourth year in the league, whatever it is. Like, he's got a... I mean, he made a bad pinch, and I know he's not a defenseman, so he's a fish out of water out there on the blue line, but he's got to be more aware. I mean, how long are you going to be at this where you just give the puck away the way you give the puck away, and just in some cases have no sort of awareness about getting back or like just doing the right thing in terms of not just offense. You know, it's just he's frustrating to me. But of course, he scores the game tying goal, and Krug has the game winning assist. So like those two guys drive you crazy. However, they also got you the 2 points.
I mean, had they lost that game on a shorthanded goal, holy crap. Like, it just, it's the kind of thing that it make you beat your head against the wall. Both of those guys should, like, buy Marchand a car.
That's a little strong. Maybe a
sub. No, they got plenty of dough. Pasternak's got plenty of dough now.
Like a sub or something. How about that? David and Newton on the Sox. Hi, David.
Hey, guys. I think you're being a little bit tough on J.D. Martinez. Yeah, he had a bit of an outlier year, but over the past 4 years, he's got almost 130 home runs. He's got one of the top three OPSs in the league. This past year, he ran away with it. He had like 60 points better than Trout and Stanton. So I just think, I think Stanton obviously would have been the ideal pick, but
David, when you combine all of his stats, you know, and you go cumulative over the last 4 years, you're right. I mean, that sounds good. You know what scares me? Home run totals. 23, 38, 22, 45.
Right.
Oh, bing, bang, bing, bang. And then again, the 45, 26 came after the trade or the All-Star break or whatever, when in the second half of the year.
29 of them came with Arizona.
So 29.
29.
He hit 29 home runs in 62 games. Is that right?
Yep.
So, yep. I mean, that's – if you think that's going to sustain. So when you lump that in with the previous 4 years, yes, you come up with that total. But if guys like that don't scare you, then I don't know who would.
Yeah, he should scare the crap out of you. And again, so the numbers are what they are. I look at Martinez and I say he's a five hitter or six hitter. He's not a three or a four. I don't go into it saying now look, if he comes here and produces, all the power to him, the Red Sox will have gotten it right. But to me it doesn't feel like that's the way it's gonna go.
Here's Martin on the Cape on the Bees. Hi, Martin.
I don't know, like, when Terry Crew gets open on that slap shot, he can't put a puck in an open garage from the driveway.
Okay, are you talking about third period? He's walking down the high slot, and he misses the whole net?
Yes.
Yeah.
Brutal.
I mean, it's unbelievable. The kid's absolute poison. Year after year, he's like dragging an anchor from a battleship around the ice. I hate his intestines, his very DNA. To me, he's the Bogarts of the Bruins. I got a Red Sox thought for you, Mike, if you want it.
Sure, go ahead.
You would think the Red Sox could do better since they saved a boatload of money in potential sexual misconduct lawsuits the day they fired Fowle. Because the best thing you can say about them right now is that hopefully all the women within range of the dugout are a lot safer this season.
So I think it's all consensual, Martin. We're not going to go down that road. The first thing on Krug, he's a tough one. What, do you have his stats up by any chance? What's his plus minus? Is it still like... Is he still leading the Bruins Open?
The last time I checked, he was a minus nine.
At minus nine, I was going to say. Leader in the clubhouse at minus nine.
I just got that, the Bruins Open.
Yeah, he's frustrating defensively, man, and he gives the puck away. But, again...
He's a minus eight this season.
So, and I think you get a plus for that three-on-three goal, right?
You know what? He does. Oh, that's so cheap and cheesy.
No, but he got the assist.
Yeah, but that's a cheese. It's a 3-on-3 goal. That's his game. I want to know his 5-on-5, but that shouldn't count. Should not count.
We should be able to figure that out quickly. 5-on-5 plus minus, Murray, go. Can you do it?
Huh? No.
Yeah, there's fancy stats there. You got the computer open. You got the computer. You should be able to do that. Don't ask me to do that crap.
He's tied for third on the team in points.
Right, exactly. So what? But if it nets out a negative, what's the point? I guess. But, you know, the advanced metrics people tell you the plus-minus is a dinosaur. It's like RBI for the baseball people. You can't you don't look at plus-minus.
See, I think it's valuable, though, for a defenseman.
What's his Corsi is what they'd want to know.
Oh, God,
I'm joking. I don't want to know. But yeah,
don't call in, DJ. I don't care. I don't want to hear from you.
Put it on your whiteboard and slap it up
on
the simulcast.
No, don't even do that. Just go away, DJ.
No. That's what I want to know. DJ, slap it up on your whiteboard, run into Vinny's office, and tell me what Krug's Corsi isn't if it's any good.
See, to me, I think it is valuable for a defenseman. Who wants a defenseman that's a minus 20?
I don't want anyone who's a minus, but I...
Okay, but a forward, at least if it's Pasternak, you can say, fine. You know, he gets your goals on the power play. He scores you 35. So even strength, he's not a, you know, and maybe you can mitigate him with someone like Bergeron. How do you mitigate a minus defenseman? I mean, you're screwed.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a hypocrite.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Patriots Steelers, Mass. Let's start to get to it, shall we?
Sure, yes, let's do.
Okay. Beadle and Zoe played this sound earlier. This happened yesterday on the conference call with Mike Tomlin and the Patriots reporters. I found it interesting. This is coming off of what we all remember to be that goofy interview between Tomlin and Tony Dungy a couple weeks ago on Sunday Night Football before the Packers game, where obviously Mike Tomlin looks past the Packers, he looks past the Bengals, he looks past anyone he's playing and talks about not just the first meeting with the Patriots, but the second, and that the team has what it takes to win a championship and all of this nonsense, right? We all remember it. So he was asked about that, follow-up questions about that yesterday on the conference call with New England media, because here obviously in New England, tisk, tisk, we don't do that.
Correct, yes.
It's one game at a time, Mike. So he was asked about that on the conference call. Here's a couple different cuts. Here's number one.
Coach, we hear a lot in the NFL about one week at a time, but you've never been shy about talking about future challenges. Why is that your philosophy, and why don't you shy away from that?
You know, because we all talk goals at the outset of these seasons, and we understand what those goals are. And there's obvious things that occur along the way if you're, you know, moving in the right direction in terms of some of those goals. If, you know, if you set out on the season to be world champs, then obviously you're going to play in significant games along the way. The road gets increasingly narrow. That's part of being or the pursuit of world championship play. So, you know, it's ridiculous to goal set and not to acknowledge natural things that occur along the way if you're committed to the pursuit of your goals.
Okay. So, fair enough.
Absolutely. The completely legitimate answer.
What am I going to do? Ignore the fact that we're one of the best teams in the league and we're playing for a championship?
Right. And that we're going to have big games that are on our schedule? Like, I'm not supposed to identify those?
I'm just answering the question and stating the obvious that we're playing big games. The road narrows. There's only a couple teams left at the end, and you got to get past those teams. And what do you want me to do?
Yes. It's shocking to us because it's not how they do it here.
Because here, they don't do that. Right. Here, there's not an acknowledgement of that obvious, just sort of the nature of sports and the dwindling of teams and going for a championship. It's just the way it goes.
Correct.
And Tomlin says, well, what am I supposed to do? Ignore that. So then there was the follow-up again. Go ahead, Jimmy, please.
You guys did get some criticism for looking ahead to the Patriots game, but you guys are also still on a long winning streak right now. Is that kind of a sign that you don't necessarily have to act like the Patriots or be the Patriots to be successful in the NFL?
You know, I don't know that any of us were looking ahead, to be quite honest with you. That's the way it was described by you guys. We were simply answering questions. We were doing our professional due diligence. When we do interviews and people ask us about potential big games down the road, we're going to politely answer questions and do so honestly. That's not us looking down the road. That's us simply performing our professional duties.
Okay. Think that was a shot at the Patriots who don't do that?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I think it's, you know, again, they're just culturally, they're so different, the two organizations. And so, you know, the irony in it is that you're telling me Belichick doesn't look ahead? Bill doesn't plan ahead?
No, they're just not allowed to verbalize it.
So, of course Bill does. He totally does. So he makes sure. Now, look, I understand the message Belichick is trying to send. But let's face it, half the stuff he says is asinine. Really. I mean, he went into Miami and held guys out of that game, didn't he? Why? Because he wants them ready for Pittsburgh on Sunday. Well, isn't that looking ahead? And then he gets pissed off when someone asks him whether he was looking ahead to Pittsburgh. Well, of course you were. Could Jonathan, I keep calling him Jonathan, Van Noy. Could Kyle Van Noy have played in that game if they absolutely positively had to have a win? Could Trey Flowers have played in that game? Like, I just think, you know, everybody here buys in and drinks the Kool-Aid, but a lot of the stuff they sell down there is complete bullcrap. Am I wrong?
No, and I think Tomlin's, you know, answer is honest and makes sense. Like, what do you want us to do? Well, they ask us to do these interviews, so they ask the questions, and we try and answer them honestly. Yeah, of course we're looking to New England. Well, how could you not look to New England? So, on one hand, that's it. But the other hand is this, Maz, And it goes back to, I mean, I do believe there's more than one way to skin a cat. The Patriots' way is not the only way. And there's other teams who handle things differently that have beaten you and that I've tipped my cap to. Maybe too much in hindsight, but anyway, you know, the Ravens had a different approach, and it worked for them. And the Jets had an approach, and it worked for them. And the Broncos built their team and did things differently than you, and it worked for them. At least those teams beat you, though. At least those teams beat you. And they couldn't sustain it, and they didn't, you know, it didn't last. But there were a couple of years there where the Jets gave you a real hard time, and they had a real big win against you in the playoffs in your building. And Denver beat you twice to go to the Super Bowl, and they actually won one. And Baltimore beat you to go to the Super Bowl, and they won it. So you want to say you do things differently and you're not the only way, and you actually put your money where your mouth is, at least for a short period of time? Fine, tip your cap. The Steelers? The Steelers haven't gotten past you and done jack. So, like, that's where I look at Tomlin, I look at the Steelers and go, well, maybe it doesn't work for you fellas, because every time you play this Patriots team, you get pantsed and you get embarrassed. So I'm not going to give him that. I'm not going to give the Steelers the same things I would give the Jets, the Ravens, or the Broncos. Teams that have done it differently, but at least beat you. The Steelers, when's the last time they beat you?
Well, they haven't beaten you in a playoff game. I mean, start there.
They've never beaten you in the playoffs. They've never beaten you in the playoffs to go win a Super Bowl like Denver did, like Baltimore did. And the Jets didn't win at all, but they did come in here and beat you. When's the last time the Steelers came in here and beat you?
They haven't.
So, you know, shut your mouth. Like, so,
okay,
so,
but it's not
so that,
because...
So that's what it goes back to me, that they don't... The Steelers just don't have the success against you to sort of say that we do things differently and our way successful, too. Eh, not really.
Well, not against the Patriots, it's not.
Right, exactly.
Okay, not against the Patriots, it's not. But I look at it and say, like, if they lose on Sunday, is it going to be because they were looking ahead to the game?
Not because, but the looking ahead is a symptom of them not getting it as a team.
Yeah, but it would have hurt them already.
In other words, it did. They should have lost to Green Bay and/or they could have lost any of these games.
Okay, but they didn't.
But they should have.
But they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't. So the looking ahead part didn't hurt them. Like, again, if anything, it hurt the Patriots. Based on Monday night.
Right.
Like, because I believe that Belichick held guys out of that game. I do. Sorry. Like, I think, and they got surprised, and... Look, and even then, you could still argue on Bill's part, it's a smart thing to do because they didn't need the game. They can still be the number one seed if they win on Sunday. But Pittsburgh's approach to now ultimately has not bitten them in the ass. So now look, though, all that said, what if after all of this, they're 11-2, they're a game ahead, they're at home. What if they go out and lay a crap sandwich again right there on Heinz Field with ketchup on top of it, right? What if they crap right there in the field again on Sunday? Like, they're going to look like a bunch of donkeys.
To me, it's just institutional. Or it's just, look, again, if John Harbaugh and the Ravens came in here for a playoff game, I'd say, I'm going to give these guys half a chance because I respect Harbaugh's ability to get them up for a game and play you a tough game at Gillette. He's done it many times. And if the Broncos happen to get good here in the next couple of years, and you have to go into Denver for a playoff game or a big game, I'm going to say, wait, that's a tough spot against a team that has had success against you. I'm going to give them a chance. I don't give the Steelers any chance. I think they're just, I always say, they're just a lot of hype and a lot of, you know.
You give them no chance in
just
this game?
A lot of hype. I think the Pats are going to go in there and roll again. I think they're going to roll. I think they're going to roll them.
I mean, so look, it's one thing to say you like the Patriots.
It's a mental mismatch. Tomlin has no idea how to play this Patriots team. He never has. And again, the teams that I gave credit to have, and there's not many now. I mean, Rex had only lasted a couple of years. And the Broncos was more about personnel or the building. So it's really Harbaugh. Like, there's not many guys. Coughlin, if he were still coaching, right? I would look at Coughlin and say, all right, I give him half a chance. And you raised an interesting point yesterday about Coughlin whispering in the ear at Doug Marrone and the Jaguars.
Right.
Like, you know, maybe I have to rethink that. You know, some teams have had just at least a modicum of success against you. The Steelers, they've lost 8 of 9. And they've been at home. They've been on the road. They've had more talent than you. Every game's the same. It's a mental mismatch. You come out of those Steelers game saying, do you guys have any idea what you're doing? It's like every time you do that.
So just real quick, because I know you liked that Jets team when they were really coming on there, 09, 2010. But going into that divisional playoff game, did you think the Jets were going to win that game?
So I had all sorts of conflicting things because that was my Randy Moss year. They had traded Randy Moss. So I was sort of all in on the Pats that year. It was sort of weird. I did not think the Jets were going to win that game, no. I did not think they were going to win.
So that was post that they had passed you. That's when you really...
Yes.
Yeah.
I got that line from Mike and Attleboro, I'll have you know. That was Mike and Attleboro's line that I adopted. It was good for a while. It's a talented Jets team.
It was.
Just, you know...
Not sustainable, yeah, unfortunately, because they're the Jets.
It didn't last.
I just think it's different this year with the Steelers. I really do. I think they've, the resiliency that they've shown with all these primetime games and how they've pulled them out of their caboose time and again, it annoys the hell out of me. It's that. I think they're extra there's extra motivation there because of the Shazier injury. I think that's kind of a factor. And I think Brady's more hurt than we really know, and I think that's going to play in, too.
Yeah, I just think it's you know, it has a chance to be a loss. Like you say, no chance. I don't know how you get to no chance.
Coaching. Coaching. Coaching is how I get to no chance.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Ho, ho, ho! You know, many find it hard to believe I own a sleigh that can fly. But you know what I find hard to believe? The unbelievable offers going on at the winter event.
The Mercedes-Benz winter event is back with incredible offers on the sporty CLA, the thrilling C-Class, the versatile GLA, the safe and secure GLE, the innovative GLC, and of course, the unequaled E-Class. But hurry, because these sleighs are going fast. Visit mbusa.com/winter event. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.